Okay, great. Of course, we're just coming off of the new grantees who have had to submit their grants last week, and we're going to be continuing with the PLCs every other week, and next one will be on the 15th. And we're going to be talking to our grantees, and we'll be talking to grantees who have just been selected in a year or two, and they're just in their startup phase. Today, we're going to be talking to a grantee who has been doing it for quite a while. And as I said before, they were doing it fairly consistently, and then they missed one, and then they're starting up again in 2016. So they're kind of like a new grantee with a lot of experience. So, but before we get started there, Glo, we always start out with the news from Washington.
Actually, news from Washington was pretty quiet this week. I did hear from Rachel on Monday. Of course, everybody knows that the funding opportunity for this cycle has closed as of last Friday. And so the only update that she had was that applicants should be receiving a receipt of their submission within the next week or two. And that was actually it from there.
Okay, so
the other two, huh?
Go ahead.
The other announcements were just from us here at HMTRI. Another reminder, as always, about the 2017 annual all-grantee meeting. This is going to be held on August 9th and 10th at the Crown Plaza in Alexandria, Virginia. It's open to presently funded EPA grantees, past EPA grantees, and PLC members. There's no charge to attend, and we can pay for your hotel reservation through our cooperative agreement with EPA for three nights. So if you are interested in attending, then please contact me. My email is ghanne@eicc.edu. The deadline for making hotel reservations is July 17th, so contact me as soon as you know whether you can attend.
Great.
Then the other thing is that we are in the process of updating our Brownfields Toolbox website, and one of the things that is on our website now is a slider along the top that has some photos that grantees sent us several years ago that link to additional information about their program, whether it's their website, a success story, anything that you want to share. And we are looking to update that. So if you have photos that you would like to send to be included on our website, again, my email is ghanne@eicc.edu. The photos just need to be of high resolution in a PNG or a JPEG format. So pretty simple. Some of the photos that you may send may also be used in a report that we're updating from 1998, I believe, Best Practices for Job Training Programs in Brownfields Redevelopment Initiatives. That still has a lot of good information in it that still applies today, but it does need to be updated, and so we are in the process of doing that. Some of the photos that people send me may be also used in that report. That's it for me, Mike.
Great. Now, for those of you who just submitted last week, hopefully you won't hear, you'll get a notice that they received your application, but hopefully you won't hear anything in March after that. That's the month when they disqualify people because they didn't meet the qualification criteria. Then after that, it's the long wait till about May or June, and it's a matter of the contractors, after they've screened them, then they go into the evaluation criteria, and that takes a while, depending on getting their team together, going through the 60 or 70 proposals, which will probably drop down to about 40 or so, and then they'll go through those, and then they'll pick out the 17 with the highest scores. One thing I would caution is if you submitted a grant and you have partners in there with phone numbers, if they can contact them, make sure you keep those people up to date, particularly the people who might be answering the phone. Anyone who's involved in that grant, keep them up to date on where you're at, give them a timeline, tell them your intentions to keep going on this, but that there is a possibility, as it might be remote, but they might be contacted by one of the reviewers. We'll do that randomly, and just to see if they're on board. So it's just something to, and it's a good courtesy to keep your partners on board and up to date on what you've done. You submitted the grant. You're waiting. This is the timeline. Probably won't hear till May or June. That letter will come to the principal that's on the grantee. So you may not hear. It may not go directly to you. Whoever is the principal contact will get that. So keep that in mind, and hopefully they'll notify you immediately as soon as they are notified of the award. So just keep everyone in plan. Another thing you might do in this downtime is, if you've got training contractors or you need to go out for bid on anything, it's a good time to do it, because after you're approved, then we go into the work plan phase where you start to nail down everything you're going to be doing for the next year. So we'll put some other information in the post-session notes about some things that are going on and some information that may be of interest that you may want to look into. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Tacoma, as I already indicated how well they've done over the years. And I've always thought it was an excellent example of partnerships and how people work together. And just for the people that are on board from Tacoma, it's an example of them working together and each of the groups doing what's best for them. So I'll turn it over to you, and go for it.
Great. Thank you. Again, my name's Amy Bell, and I'm with Goodwill. And we've got Michelle Barr from Clover Park Technical College and Keith Armstrong from the City of Tacoma, along with a couple other people as well. Our partnership is unique in that we've got the city as a financial agent and the community college as the training hub. What we do here at Goodwill is primarily the recruitment of students, as well as the case management piece for the students coming through the program, as well as the job placement on the other end. So we're very excited about our partnership. We've had some changes. While the city has had this grant, as you mentioned, for a number of cycles, and Clover Park has been involved, I believe, since the beginning. So they're great, but they've had some staffing changes. This is Michelle's first grant cycle that she's managed on that part. And we've had changes at the city. This is Keith's first trip to the rodeo, and it's also Goodwill's first time to have been brought into this partnership. So those of us here at the table are all relatively new, even though we've taken up the reins of what was laid down in front of us, you know, from the previous employees. Primarily, our success on the recruitment side, just to give you a really brief overview, we do three orientations for each grant cycle right now, or for each cohort. Right now we're in our second cohort. We're about halfway through our second cohort. With this second cohort, we had 158 individuals from our community come to one of the three orientation sessions. We had 88 of them choose to test, and we administer the CASAS assessment test, which is a test that tests for the 10th grade level for reading and for math. We use that as a benchmark. And of that, we had, of the 88 that tested, we had, I believe, 56 that passed that assessment. So we had a field of 56 to fill our 22 spots. In our grant, it is written that we will recruit from specific zip codes. So we factored that in where each of those applicants lived. But we also have a very strong military community in this area. We have Joint Base Lewis and McChord just about 15 miles down the road from where we're located. And so we have a large amount of transitioning service members, which are prime candidates for this type of training. So what we've done in our waiting pool is we weigh a veteran at the same weight or application as someone who lives in the desired zip code. We're not penalizing them for not living in the preferred zip code. So out of that pool of 55. The partners all got together. We went through the applications. We did some phone interviews with participants to get clarification if there were some questions as to their application. And we looked at what experiences they had that they had self-disclosed, and we also considered their status as far as veterans. One of the things that we've talked about a little bit, too, is we do run background checks in order to take part in this grant. They cannot have a felony more recent than 7 years, so we run those background tests. And we also do a drug screen the first day of class. So when we had narrowed down the field to 22 that we wanted to offer slots, we also had a field of 3 or 4 alternates in case anybody failed the drug screen. But from day one on the orientation and all the paperwork that we, all the flyers, everything we do in the media, we make it very well known that we will be testing the first day of class for controlled substances. The state of Washington is unique in that we allow recreational use of cannabis. However, with it being a federally not the case, we do get some pushback from some potential clients on this, but we tell them it's a federal grant, and that's the way it is. So that's kind of in a nutshell what we do. As far as promotion, we utilize everything we can do for free. We use Eventbrite to track people to come to the orientations. We ask them to sign up. If you don't already utilize Eventbrite, feel free to contact me. I can give you information on it, or you can look at it online. It's a fabulous way to track people, invite people to events, and there's no fee at all to use that service as long as you're not charging for the tickets, which, of course, we don't do. We also utilize our WorkSource offices, each of our individual Facebook pages. We cross-promote between the college and the city and Goodwill. We have our media departments out pushing. We've done events in the local media. We have gone on television to promote this. We've been in the newspaper. We do anything we can to get our story out on this training. So, Keith and Michelle, anything you want to add on that?
Yeah, this is Keith Armstrong from the city, and I am managing it from the city's perspective. One of the things, I want to give you a historical background with the city. We've done this grant since 2007, and Clover Park Technical College has been a partner since day one, and we're glad to have Goodwill on them. Welcome to, because it's been a really good partnership. This cohort, or this cycle, 2016 grant, has been very successful in getting the word out. I mean, this has been a grant that has been going for a while, but as far as publicly known about the benefits of it, it hasn't been this successful. And it was really good, the marketing that we did for this, and the publicity has been absolutely fantastic. The city's been pushing it very hard on that job placement, job training, and workforce development. That's become the watchword in Washington. And so we're using this as a vehicle to push workforce development. We've had grants over the years as low as $141,000. And one year we had a $500,000 grant. I'm wondering what happened that year. But it's a lot of money that we want to use wisely. And so as much as we can use for free, that's more money for the students, because we want to focus on the students and their training and being prepared. That's really what we want to focus on, how we can get them prepared. And then the job placement, that's really important. So we're doing a lot of focus on getting them working and then following up on them with some good stories. Because the more publicity on how people have changed their lives, it makes a better story for the local residents. And that coordination has helped the city pump more effort into these type of programs. So we're looking to do more of this type of program in the city of Tacoma, because this has been good for everybody, the citizens, the government, the partners, the community, and it's really been helpful. There's a couple things at the end. I want to talk about some lessons learned, because I've got some lessons learned from our prior contract administrators on what to watch out for and what to do. So I'll wait for those comments until we go to the end.
Okay, and I think Mike pretty much wanted us to focus on the recruitment piece. Is that correct?
Yes, recruitment and placement. And, of course, the whole point, and it was interesting what you did on the drugs, in that you had to get them into the program before you could test them, but they had to be very aware that they were going to be tested. At the end of the last PLC, we had that issue of you, and it's more of a problem in some states where the WIBs are recruiting and the Workforce Investment Boards are recruiting, and they have certain restrictions put on them that they have to look at everyone, and some states also have banned the box. So you really have to look at everyone. It is what I call the recruitment dilemma. You have to look at everyone, but the question is, you work backwards from your labor market assessment about your employers. Some employers, and this was brought up before, particularly in rural areas, if you have, say, a national lab that cannot hire ex-offenders under certain conditions, cannot hire people with drug issues, you work backwards, and do you even try to recruit them, or do you not even consider them? And how do you even know that they're not fudging on the test? These are some real issues that are occurring in some places. And, of course, you're in a state where the question, and Arch Shanks is too, in Oakland, where people could go around the corner and get drugs, and they're saying, well, why can't we smoke marijuana? I could just go out the door and buy it freely. So address that?
To that point, that's very much a very real point. And the way that we frame it through the conversation is we get up in front of this classroom full of potential candidates. They see that they are in a room with 45 to 55 other people who are looking for those same 22 slots, and they know that there are three orientation times, so potentially there could be 150 candidates for these 22 slots. We are very upfront. There are only 22 seats in this class. There are no costs associated to the students other than their time. And if they're serious about the training, if they want this training, then they need to understand that one of the parameters is that they will have to pass a drug test that tests for narcotics and for cannabis. And we make the point really clear to them, hey, we understand it's legal in the state of Washington, but we just blame it on as much as we love the EPA, we blame it on the EPA. We say this is a federally funded grant. We have no control over this. It's written into our grant. We have to test for it. And if you test positive, you will not be allowed to participate. And we tell them, you know, we start orientations a couple of months before the class cycle. So we tell them, hey, if you smoke this morning, don't do it again. You know, you probably have time to get it out of your system between now and then. You will be tested the first day of class. And we actually, Michelle's done a great job with Keith to have the testing agent show up at the orientation at the actual first day of class when they're doing all their paperwork at the community college, that they then have to go pee in the cup, and we get those results back on the first day of class, so, you know, the following Monday or Tuesday. And so to that point, we have our couple of alternates that are there in that process. So the first couple of days, while we only have 22 seats, we've got 25 people in the room. So if we do have somebody that tests hot, we can say, okay, you can leave, and we've got somebody else already processed that can just continue on with the class. So far it's worked well.
Who does the drug testing?
The city pays for it, but we contract it out for another to a private company. With the first cohort, we were testing everybody. Earlier on in the process, I think, is what we did last time, because there was money written into the grant so we could use it as one of our preliminary screens. But this time, it wasn't written into the grant. The funds were not there. So the city was gracious enough to agree to pay for it, but we're trying to keep our costs down. And it costs about $45 a pop. So we only want to test those that we know we're going to allow into the class as long as they pass.
Now, you operate now with Goodwill, where previously Peter was working with the WIB. Is that correct?
Yes.
So you kind of transferred from the WIB, or is the WIB still involved?
No, they're not. They're not.
Oh.
We were brought in to replace them.
Right. Oh, okay.
And actually, To that point, we help them. We helped out the city in their final cohort of their last grant cycle. Peter and I had chatted at a community meeting, and he had seen some of the things that we'd been accomplishing here at Goodwill for recruitment. And he asked me if I'd be willing to work with him on the recruitment for the last cohort. And he was very impressed. And so at that point, he asked us to sign on with the next grant cycle, and we were fortunate enough to receive that grant.
I'm very impressed by Goodwill across the country, and many of our grantees and some of those that are on the call today or listening to this may want to consider looking at the Goodwill, because we have Goodwills as primary grantees. They have community access, and they're excellent. And I think the impressive thing about Goodwill is they have a lot of latitude to do different things.
We do. And one of the things that I really like to do, my job title is business development. So I am out there working with businesses throughout the entire reach of my job. And so I work very closely with different organizations as well that are looking for employees. So not only do we have access to a number of employers that we can tag, but we also have the different WorkSource offices, the state, all of the different groups in the community that are working with unemployed members. And so we connect with them, and they get the word out about our training programs. And it really helps.
This is really an interesting model, because when you go to the WIB, and it's a WIB exclusive, there may not be as much outreach to employers. They have a massive program. And one thing they can do is qualify everyone that comes through your program to make sure they can get the benefits. But you could do the same thing as working with the WIBs, but you have a little more flexibility to perhaps go outside the box in terms of not the traditional WIB recruitment and placement activities, which is kind of interesting. And I assume that you screen everyone for WIB benefits from Department of Labor benefits.
We do, right? But that's not mandatory to be a member of this program. I mean, we use for all of our different programming, if someone has like dislocated worker dollars or any of those different classification monies, then yes, we'll tap into them. But if we have somebody walk through our doors that wants to take part in one of our many training programs and they don't have access to those different services, whether their income levels are too high but they still want to take a computer class or whatever their situation is, we don't turn anyone away due to the fact that they don't have funding attached. We self-fund them through.
The other thing I wonder about is how do you deal with the people that you keep in reserve? In other words, and that's really a good strategy. I think it's an excellent strategy because, as we had discussed earlier, you may have someone go through your application and you're ready to bring them on board, and then all of a sudden they have another offer, they get sick. So now, you've got to have a backup, but then how do you handle that backup?
Well, and again, what we do is through the process of the orientations, we tell people that these are the different hoops, basically, that they have to jump through, that they're going to have to take this assessment test and they're going to have to do the drug screen. And we tell them that we'll notify them as we're going through the process. And one of the things that we say is we're going to make offers to 22 people in this, you know, in the orientations for these seats, but you may be selected as an alternate. We will reach out to you and ask you if you want to be an alternate. An alternate means that you show up the first couple of days of class, and if somebody else drops out because they either fail the drug screen or they get a job offer or they whatever, you could perhaps, you know, if you will then be offered their slot. And to that point, we talk about the fact that we have historically gone through our alternates. With this second cohort, we had 22 that we had confirmed offers to that agreed to take the class. We had three alternates. We needed all three alternates. The first day of class, we had somebody email that they'd shown up the Friday before where we do all the paperwork at the school. But that first Monday in class, they sent an email and said, sorry, I got a job offer. I'm not going to be there. So that meant that our first alternate who did show up, he got the slot. He didn't know when he woke up that morning that he was going to have a slot in the class, but he did by the end of the day. And we had stories that happened on two other ones, so that within the first 3 days of class, we had no alternates left, and we had 22 students. In full disclosure, we've since lost two more students. We now have a cohort we're in our fourth week of training. We're down to 20 students, and hopefully we'll be able to hold on to all 20 of them. We had one have a child care issue, and she just bailed on us day before yesterday. And we had actually one that we chose to dismiss. The Clover Park chose to dismiss due to attendance. So the instructor that Clover Park has, he's fabulous, the head instructor, but he does not take any shortcuts at all. And we're very clear with the students that they have got to be there on time every day. And this gentleman had been late virtually every morning. Michelle had talked to him. The instructor had talked to him. He'd received a couple of different warnings. And finally, he was just asked to leave because it was disruptive to the rest of the class.
That's a really good strategy. Retention, and we've always emphasized, when you lose a seat, that's something that someone who's really deserving is going to miss out on. And that strategy of retention and how you do backfill is very interesting. And how long will it take before you have to close the doors to not bring an alternate in? Is it one or two classes? Or?
Yeah. So we've built in a couple classes. Not that they're not important, but they're not like the core of the program. So the first day is first aid and CPR. And then the second and third days are another, it's a college offer class, so not a certification or like asbestos or HAZWOPR, but it's chemical safety awareness, which it's important knowledge for them to have to set them up for the certifications, but it's not, if they miss those 2 days, it's not vital. So we set in like sort of a lead-in so that if we have to bring in alternates and they don't attend those classes, they won't have missed anything crucial. Like they can still go into OSHA and HAZWOPR later on and not be missing anything.
So the answer, I think, is that first week is those kinds of courses. If we don't have a full slate at the end of that first week, then we just got to run with what we have.
A couple other things we also built in were so first aid and then a couple classes like the chemical safety awareness, and then Goodwill did a couple days of workshops within that first week. So they did like a resume writing job search workshop, which again is something that's important, but it's something someone could miss and not be behind.
That's a great strategy in terms of retention and trying to maximize the seats that you have available. Really good. This has been really good on how you're going about this whole idea of recruitment and drugs and how you're backfilling those seats that you miss. We haven't talked at all about, and we unfortunately don't have time, about your curriculum, but are there particular money courses that you find, HAZWOPR probably being one, is there, in your community, is there a particular course that really works out for you that your students are happy that they have?
Flagger and HAZWOPR are the two top ones that they can find employment with.
What is that first one?
Flagger certification.
Oh, okay.
And we've added that. Yeah, that helps with the union, to be able to get them on with the union, which is one of our employment strategies. So I realize that we've burned through our time here, but I am more than happy to have a conversation with anybody who's listening that would like more information. You can certainly send me an email or give me a call, but we're all available, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
I'll put your contact information in the notes, if that's all right.
Oh, please, that's fine.
Keith mentioned that he had some interesting do's and don'ts that he wanted to present. Perhaps, I know we're keeping everyone over the 30 minutes, but perhaps you could give us a little rundown of how you feel that this program is challenged and maybe some of the positive points.
Well, there are about three or four points I want to make, and I'll be glad to follow it up on email, on the notes. First thing is when we do this, we want you to think about what you want to offer, when you get the RFP or whatever the proposal comes out is to think about your partners that you're thinking about partnering with and start with them early. Just don't wait until you get and start the application. Start early. And there's a lot of forms that comes out from the EPA. There's about 6 or 7 forms that comes with that, and you have to fill those out. They have deadlines, and there are no exceptions for the deadlines. You have to fill them out exactly on time, and you have to do all of those. So that's one thing to be cognizant of is the deadlines. That's the first thing is fill out all those forms on time. The second thing is just be prepared. One of the things that we have done over the years is targeted some community members that are local that we can partner with because it makes it easier to promote, easier to sell to your organization when you have a local college or a local organization that's doing some similar things. So we the city can say, you know, Clover Park is already working with us on this or Goodwill, and they're easy to give more money and more support for that. Another thing I wanted to mention is that the partners that you have that you're thinking about, talk to them well ahead of the RFP deadline. So don't think I'm going to offer Flagger and then go and say, who can we work with? Work with them way ahead. The more you have, the better it is. But the thing that we found has been real successful is be detailed in what you're doing. When we looked at the scoring on what's important, the implementation of the plan is 50% of the whole thing. That's the best thing you can do is be detailed in what you're going to do. Not only do you say what you're going to do, but how you're going to do it, who you're going to work with, what zip code you're going to use, what area, what population, and how you're going to implement this. And I say pick a backup strategy. Whatever strategy you use, have a backup strategy too so that you can hit your numbers for the grant and also be prepared when things go awry because we just had a hiccup in our program and we're just bounce back and regroup. But backup strategies are really, really good. The one last thing I want to mention is for the grantees is be flexible on your trainees. The whole thing is about them. It's not about the city having a program that you have to cater to what I have. We have to go by the federal rules, of course, but we try to work on some strategies to be flexible. Whatever we can do to wipe out the barriers for these students, that's what we want to try to work out and be flexible. And I think that has helped to be more successful for us to hit all of our numbers. And the last point I want to mention is we had this such great response for this last cohort. They had 158 for those 22 slots. Well, we're also going to look at talking to those ones who were not successful. And we're thinking of doing something to steer them into other opportunities that the city and the state and the county has, so that they don't go away. So one, we're telling them they can go to the next cohort, but let's find you something right now. So we don't want them to go away, but we've got a lot of publicity through the media for this, and we just want to make sure that everybody gets an opportunity to work in the county or the state and not just this program. So we're steering them other places. But definitely awesome. Be flexible with your trainees and do everything way in advance and on time. That's the biggest points I could tell you.
Does anyone have any questions of Keith or Amy or any of the other individuals from Tacoma? I understand.
I have a question. When she was talking about those two certifications, I still never got the name of the first one. I'm sorry.
Flagger certification and HAZWOPR.
What is Flagger? Could you explain to us?
Yes, they work on construction sites. It's like traffic direction.
Stop
sign. Flagger, FL. Yeah. Okay, I got it now. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Wave your flag.
I got it now.
Yeah. You know, that's something that we sometimes, a course like that can be incredibly important. We've had grantees who were doing work on highways, and that was a money course, basically. Are you certified? It depends on the state, but if you're certified to do that, you could work on the highways.
That's exactly. And it's a great way for people to be able to get into the union as well.
Right.
That and the HAZWOPR has been, and the HAZWOPR is the one that, of course, we all have to do in this grant, but it has been the one that people have asked us to put in. And it's just a one-day class, and it is very economical for the college to provide it, and we're thrilled that we're able to offer it.
We find forklift is another one of those.
We use that one as well. That one's in our course offerings as well.
Excellent. Well, sometime we'll delve into your curriculum, but this has been great. And, you know, you actually, since you've done 14 of these, but this is really your first year. You were really, and we're focusing early on here on those people who were granted funding last year, who were just getting started. And you really had to kind of reinvent yourself. You had to establish new relationships and redevelop your coursework and how you're going to approach this. And I understand now why you were chosen last year, and it sounds like you're off to a great start. And you've already done two cohorts, which is, or getting into your second cohort, which is fantastic.
Right, and we're actually in the recruitment phase for our third cohort. Our third and final cohort starts April 20th.
Excellent.
So, but thank you very much. No, we're very proud of our partnership.
Great. Well, thank you again. And any other questions before I cut everyone off and go on? Okay. Well, our next session will be on the 15th. So everyone have a good 2 weeks, and we'll kind of continue the conversation on running these programs.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you again, thank you. All of you, Amy, Heath, and everyone. Thank you again.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.